Welcome back for episode 302. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. I'm back in the States after a visit overseas, and I'd like to say it's good to be back, but actually it's weird to be back. This is a strange place, this United States, and so I'm adjusting to it, but I can't tell what's just decaying culture and what's jet lag.
Interesting developments this week. We can talk. This morning I woke up, there was reports of a civil war in Russia, and I was like, what? It turns out it's this guy for Wagner, I guess it's Wagner, how you pronounce it.
Prigozhin.
Yeah, he's quite a colorful character, if I understand. Like, he's been criticizing the generals and the Russian army and the Ministry of Defense, and apparently he tried to do a quick tank maneuver from Rostov, I guess, was to try to make it from Moscow. What's going on there?
Well, first of all, the head of the Wagner group is sort of famous for bellicose and really bizarre accusations of the regular army leaders, particularly this character Shoigu, who is overall commander of the Russian forces and Ukrainian special military operation. And he is, to characterize him, I mean, I would say the only character, I mean, it's not anyone from real life military that you can draw a parallel to. The closest thing to him would be like General Jack Ripper in Dr. Strangelove. He's just a cartoon character. You know, he always appears with automatic weapons, and every time Wagner had an achievement in Bakhmut, he would show up for a photo op. But anyway, what happened was that he claimed that his outfit had been attacked by the general regular Russian army, that they launched missiles against them and they had taken casualties, and so he therefore was heading to Moscow with his boys to clean up the mess. You know, so this was a gigantic news story for a few hours. I got like a dozen emails and three phone calls, which is rare. You know, there people were calling me, what's going on? And I said, don't worry, this is all theatrics. I've seen this guy in action before, and he's threatened to do this a couple of times during the Bakhmut siege. We're going to pull out. My men aren't getting the munitions that they deserve, and there's treason. He accused the general Russian military high command of treason. He did this a couple times. So when you saw it,
Wagner is kind of it's a mercenary outfit, like Blackwater or something.
I mean, it would be equivalent of the French Foreign Legion. Would be the closest parallel. Mm-hmm. It has a it is a private military organization, but the large majority of people are simply former Russian soldiers and technicians. That's where they get most of the people.
Okay.
There's this idea that they get them from prisons, and they do get some, but it's a small minority of the overall composition. They're actually ex-military guys with highly specialized skills. What Wagner's used for is, at least in the Ukrainian situation, is assaults. They're the ones who are trained and know how to get into places that are fortified. They have special training to do this. And they certainly did a good job in Bakhmut. They killed 100,000 Ukrainians, for God's sake.
Presumably not just mercenaries. They're Russian. I mean,
they're Russian. Oh, yeah. And they're very patriotic. So in other words, it isn't like, I would say, it's very different than just a mercenary crew. They're very patriotic. And some of them are actually volunteers when they retire from the Russian army. They would go to Wagner, and they would feel that it was a more militaristic, more specifically defensive to the Russian interests in the world kind of outfit than the regular army. So it's almost like a special ops team, you know, kind of thing. And so
I guess they're not beholden to the Geneva Convention or anything either, right?
That's right, they're outside of that. Okay. But anyway, because he claimed they were attacked, he then launched his men toward Moscow. And for a few hours, it was kind of exciting. They were traveling along. No one could really quite figure out, like, for example, well, why doesn't the Russian Air Force just blow them up, you know, if they're actually in rebellion? But there were bizarre and contradictory comments going on that regular Russian Army Corps had met them and was escorting them. And they wanted to get to Moscow. They got about 200 kilometers from Moscow. And at that point, the news wires, you know, released the statement that Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, had had a long phone heart-to-heart with Petrosian, and they had agreed on a kind of a peace deal. And he was going to, Petrosian is now going to leave Wagner. He's going to retire and go to Belarus to live out his days. And everything is good. It's all over. And somehow the attack with missiles on his core is just something that, you know, disappears into the mist of recorded history. So it's gone. But what I was telling people, this morning was that, no, don't worry, this is not real. And they said, well, why would such a thing happen? Russia is now going to look weak. This is going to have vast, you know, economic implications. The assault on the unipolarity in the world's economic situation. I mean, China can't be with something that's so chaotic. And I said, don't worry about this. This will blow over in 2 days. What I thought was that the current Ukrainian counteroffensive is now just boldface a suicide mission, right? They've lost some reports, and the guys that I look to, you know, I think particularly Colonel Douglas McGregor gets good information. He's a very large critic of the Pentagon and the neocons, and somehow he gets information which I think has turned out to be correct over and over again. And he said they've lost about half the army and over half of their mechanized pieces to be able to continue the assault. So in other words, this army that NATO assembled turned out to be a suicide squad, right? So it's a suicide squad that now is dead. So yesterday, they actually paused. And the speculation was, well, they just don't have the capacity to fight any longer. They don't have any tanks that work. The planes that they had have all been shot down. They've lost half of the troop. And then there was last week, there was reports that some of the units now were refusing to go forward because they knew now that if this is just a suicide operation. There were two reports of large scale, I think one division just said, no, we're not going forward. So anyway, what I was speculating this morning is that what you're looking at is just large scale theatrical warcraft here. And what they're doing is giving a rationale for the neocons, for Victoria Nuland, to now go to the press and say, Russia is hanging by a thread. All we need to do is just continue to keep the pressure up. We need to create a few more Leopard tanks and some F-16s. Mm-hmm. And we can gin up, we get some more Ukrainians and attack. And Russia will fall because you can see they're hanging by a thread. So that was what I thought Russia was doing. They were essentially saying, let's keep going. You want to commit suicide as a nation? We are happy to oblige. We're going to eventually use the Ukraine as a neutral zone. So the more depopulated it is, the better. So let's just continue the process. So here's your rationale, neocons. Just now you can use this with Congress, with whoever you want. Because they're going to need another explanation for continuing to fund this suicide project after the failed counteroffensive, which is just at this point just ludicrous. So this is what I thought that they did, is they simply created the impression that there was real chaos in the Kremlin and real chaos inside of the Russian military forces, so that now Victoria Nuland can go with her cookies and raise another army. This is the third one that just died in the last 3 weeks. And I thought that something was going to happen because Zelensky issued last week and early this week a legal proclamation indicating what's called a general mobilization, which is to say all Ukrainians now are conscripted into the army. Everybody has to be, that's the go to these places and sign up and get some kind of a status. And the reason you could really see the tell, Tim, was that it said regardless of medical status. So when you are recruiting your cripples, this is typically a sign that you're at the bottom of the barrel. And so now, you know, Russia is aware of this, of course, and now they've just given the neocon, you know, basically Victoria Nuland now has another batch of cookies. She can go and try to recruit some cripples and see if they'll go to the front.
Well, maybe the Poles will fill the breach.
No, believe me, if they can, they will depopulate Europe of all, you know, young males with this process. When Ukrainian falls, and obviously it could be at any time, the Poles, I think, will be sent in. Yeah, I think that they will, they'll simply attack. They, you know, the Polish president is just the most Masonic, just miserable creature imaginable. So he'll sacrifice all of them. And then when they're done, you know, the Germans maybe can be talked into sending a few hundred thousand. Who knows? I mean, they'll, you know, Tim, go back in time. Think of World War I or World War II. Think of the Holodomor, for God's sakes. The people who are running this show have one theme and one goal, and that's genocide and depopulation. We've seen it in play now for over 100 years. And what's going on in Ukraine today is nothing new or different. And that's why when I was sitting there this morning with my cynical opinion of all this, I knew I was right because, well, you know, this is the trajectory that the Europeans have been on for over 100 years. We lost control of the political system to a group that wants to genocide us, and they just come up with clever ways over and over again to get us to march into automatic weapons or to take vaccine that sterilizes. You know, they have 100 techniques, or just to starve us out flat, right, like they did with the Holodomor. So there it is.
Yeah, I mean, they had a deal in early 2022 or the spring of 2022 that I think the Turks had negotiated, and Boris Johnson, you know, stopped that.
You know, yeah, they
wanted a war.
Perfectly reasonable deal. The Russians would basically, it didn't even say that they would annex. They would occupy the four regions. And I know them, so I'm going to say Donetsk, Lugansk, Kherson, and Zaporozhye.
Yeah, these are the Russian areas of Eastern.
No, those are the Russian-speaking zones in the Ukraine. And so they said, look, you do that. And they were going to let Ukraine keep their army. They were just going to reduce it down. It was kind of reasonable and, you know, sort of easy to digest thing for the Ukrainians. And then Johnson came in, and what the story is, he said, no, you can't do this. And we will bring in super secret weaponry that will enable you to defeat the Russians on the battlefield. This is the story that has been released, you know, by people who were there. And this turned out to be the HIMARS system, right? Mm-hmm. Which has been a complete disaster. The Russian jamming devices, just the things take off. They're going to go someplace, and then they turn around and attack the thing that launched them. The Russians just have much better kind of control of the skies and the missilery than NATO has, certainly of the Ukraine does. And anyway, so the opportunity was lost, and war just goes on and on.
Yep, which is the plan, I suppose. So one disaster to another. We had this Ocean Gate disaster. It's Ocean Gate. Yeah. It's kind of a scandal, so we call it Ocean Gate. I don't know. Yeah. There's already a gate there. But it's sort of a lot of people point out the disaster. There's sort of a metaphor for the West. But Stockton Rush, which sounds like a character out of an Ayn Rand novel or something. Stockton Rush was the CEO. He perished with four others, four passengers on this, or I guess the three passengers and one pilot, I guess, on this submersible, the Ocean Gate. I think it was, the original name was Cyclops or something. They renamed it, I guess. Ocean Gate sounds cooler. apparently it descended some 2,600 meters, and that's when it imploded, collapsed because of the water pressure. Apparently, it's the fuselage failed. It's has something to do with this carbon fiber fuselage, which I guess there's the problem with it. If it makes multiple trips, it damages the stress or the pressure, the water pressure, and weakens it. So eventually just collapses, which apparently it did.
The design is ridiculous. For really deep dives like that, you know, you have the bath escape, they're spherical. So the pressure is you know, in a completely, it's a uniform. Yeah. You don't have these areas of where the hull has different. I mean, submarines don't typically go deep depths like this. And of course, you saw the quote by what's the guy's name? It's like some prep school, like it's Thurston Rush or something.
Stockton Rush.
Yeah, you saw the quote
about 50-year-old white man.
Yeah, I just love that. Say that because that's really, I mean, because the thing is, the irony here is self-evident.
Well, that's what it is. It's here. It's a metaphor. You have a apparently a sociopathic CEO who's completely divorced from reality, declaring that he doesn't want to hire white people, and there's a disaster. Old white men, 50-year-old white men. They're working this company. Apparently, a 50-year-old white man had warned him about the fuselage and the problem with the carbon fiber. He fired the guy. The submersible itself, I understand, is only rated for 1,300 meters, and of course, I think the Titanic wreck is like 4,400 meters, so like 12,500 miles down on the ocean floor. I don't know the wisdom of doing tourist trips to see these things. This seems like a fairly dangerous, serious mission. You want sort of a military-grade expertise, meaning 50-year-old white guys. Experienced submariners, you'd think, but he wanted to die as in diversity, inclusion and equity, to kind of reverse those letters around, because apparently he did die. This sociopathic deluded CEO leading his vessel into disaster, which is kind of like what the whole West is like now. With that Ukraine and what we're being led to. Oddly enough, this is one twist to it, is that apparently it was known that it had imploded on Sunday night or Monday, and they kept the story going the entire week, recovery vessels out there and all that.
It makes a certain signature, and you know, the U.S. has got all those listening devices, so they knew right off the bat that the thing had imploded. They said that they didn't know what the sound was, but they thought it could well be. I mean, of course, the correlation just made it, you know, self-evident. But the scuttlebutt was, is they wanted the nation to be distracted from the Hunter Biden appeal. And that's
The idea of the news cycle being manipulated is such and dragged out. Obviously, this is people, there could be that angle, of course, a diversion from the Biden crime family scandals, but also the fact that the media wants a drama so people to watch. I found it odd that they were able to find the debris, and I thought they didn't know where it was, and to me it's like a needle in a haystack down there. Obviously what I figured happened, I mean, I put two and two together, is when they knew this thing imploded, they knew where it imploded, they could just triangulate it and just go down. And that's how they found it. But they knew this. James Cameron said he knew it on Monday, the director of the Titanic. Now, a trip like this is possible. I think Cameron himself has been down there more than 30 times and survived. Yeah. So you can do this if you do it properly. But apparently this guy was a nickel and diming budget cutting CEO who wanted to do things on the cheap and didn't want to hire expensive 50-year-old white guys. So,
you have very specialized equipment, you know, mm-hmm. In other words, the vessel, this thing was, it's just amazing to me that it had ever gone down successfully at all, because the design just seemed so sketchy. Mm-hmm. The kind of stuff that, you know, you can go down and typically doesn't have motors. It's either round or it's a kind of an oval shape that you just drop straight down on top of things, and then you drag it around to see if it doesn't go scooting around like a submarine at like 4,400 meters under the the ground, particularly this little mini sub, which would be something you'd use at Disneyland, you know. So it was just a ludicrous event, just ludicrous. And then of course, when it did implode, which would be, you know, just a kind of normal expectation, they didn't release that fact, which I thought was sort of cruel, because you would imagine that the families would suffer. We know the idea of them down there, you know, they're talking about whether they only have 24 hours of oxygen left and 14 hours, you know, so they were definitely making a news story distraction out of it at the expense of all of the family members. And then when it was over, you know, when they got past point where there was the oxygen could no longer be possibly, you know, enough to keep them alive, they go, oh yeah, we know where it is. Here it is. And then at that point, you know, the Hunter Biden plea deal had now gone through the media cycle and was, you know, we were off to now to the Russian Civil War, some other absurd event in between then and now and then. And, you know, it's just, they shouldn't be doing, you know, it's like the expression, you play stupid games, you know.
Mm-hmm. You win stupid prizes, right. Yeah.
So this is, I don't have much sympathy for them. It was so idiotic. And again, the comment by the CEO was just, you know, it's not what the world needs right now. And so he suffered because of his stupidity and his woke political perspectives. You know.
Yeah, he goes, when I started the business, one of the things that you'll find, there are other sub-operators out there, but they're typically have gentlemen who are ex-military submariners, who you'll see are a whole bunch of 50-year-old white guys. I wanted our team to be younger, to be inspirational, and I'm not going to inspire a 16-year-old to go pursue marine technology, but a 25-year-old, you know, who's a sub pilot or a platform operator or one of our techs can be inspirational. Now, since when is, I mean, what's the idea? You know, remember this whole idea that you have like an experienced guy teach younger people, and since when have old people not be inspirational? Huh? What's this idea going to be?
The thing is that you can really see the woke.
Yes.
Political.
They're all female, by the way. Which
you have to lie. You can't really even express reality. You have to make something that I was when he made the comment. I was thinking, you know, well, wait a second. What about that pilot Sully who landed, you know, his plane in the Hudson?
He's boring.
I mean, I seem to think a movie was made. It seemed like, you know, pretty inspirational. I mean, you can inspire people if you're a 50-year-old white guy. You're wrong. You're lying. Why are you lying? Well, you're lying because you're trying to insert a fictional history and reality for the purpose of replacing European.
Well, at a cost of your life and disaster. That's how far they're willing to take it.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a crisis of a competency now, because you have all this diversity stress. You're not dealing with the highest quality, most experienced people. You're hiring people for their, you know, for their sexual orientation or identity or their race or their sex, you know. And
I gotta interject. Did you catch San Francisco Mayor's London Breed's latest comment
regarding?
Okay, well, you know, they have a little problem in San Francisco.
Yes.
I mean, it's the city's collapsing, 40%, you know, of vacancy and stuff. So what she said was, she had an interview in Bloomberg, and she goes, you know, I think we have to start reimagining what the downtown can be. She says, we need to look at what's possible rather than dwelling on these stories of another store closing. There are lots of people who may not even shop in those places. I mean, I'm not making it up. I mean, can you imagine if you're like some business guy and you've got homeless people and fentanyl addicts passed out and your streets are covered with urine and your car's been broken into last night, and then you read this and you go, well, wait a second. She's She's not even upset about any of this. This isn't even a problem. This is part of the reimagining process.
It's all about imagining. I'm not doing it. I'm about reality. It's a fantasy.
Just think about that. Rather than, you know, like saying, well, you know, my policies are failing and, you know, we need to protect retail businesses and the rights of citizens, you know, to have safety and cleanliness, you know, things like that. She talks about, you know, let's just forget about like dwelling on these stories of store closings and things like that. We're dwelling on these stories.
Dwelling on reality. It's like, yeah.
Dwelling on the story. Rather than doing that, let's start reimagining. So anyway, I mean, I think it's just about the stupidest thing a politician has ever said. And then when you commented on, well, you know, you get these not just diversity hires, but diversity elections, right? Like with, mm-hmm. with Reed. This is, again, you know, this is what you get, you know, you now, I mean, her comment will drive out obviously more businesses who are trying to make a decision whether or not it's worthwhile staying. And as far as, wanting to convert dormant office buildings into housing, well, I mean, you know, just imagine South Chicago as you know, cause, I mean, so it's just a, you know, she is really, you know, I don't want to nail her too hard because she just is way over her head. She doesn't have a, you know, she is a complete creation of the oligarchs. You see what I mean? She doesn't know what she's doing.
Well, she's typical of this affirmative action. She's never been told that she's a moron. She's not qualified because she's a black female.
Right.
She's empowered. So she just presumes that she, you know, she's smart because no one's ever told her to shut up. You're stupid and you're incompetent and you're not even qualified to work in a cafeteria. Much less run the city government, you know, but they're hired to run the city to the ground. And no wonder Gavin Newsom has eyes in the White House, wants to get the hell out of California.
Yeah. Thanks, Gavin.
Great, he just moves job. On.
And good
By
luck.
The way, former mayor of San Francisco too, right? So they
he wasn't it.
So this whole thing, maybe it's a divergent. You mentioned the Hunter Biden's plea deal after the FBI. Hunter Biden's shady business deals have resulted in a sweetheart plea deal with no jail time for him, of course. And that, of course, other people would be afforded the same privilege or treatment. He's expected to plead guilty to two federal misdemeanor counts of failing to pay his taxes. Whoops. NBC reported a separate gun possession charge against the Biden family, against Hunter Biden, will be reportedly be dismissed if he meets certain conditions. I wonder if, you know, that's nice, meet those conditions. David Weiss has agreed to recommend only probation for Biden for his tax violations, according to sources. Weiss office said in a statement, Hunter Biden received taxable income in excess of $1.5 million annually in the calendar years of 2017. 2018, despite owing excess of $100,000 in federal income tax each year, he did not pay the income tax due to either year. He just doesn't want to pay his taxes. Regarding the gun charge, the statement said from on or about October 12, 2018 through to October 12, 2018 to October 23, 2018, Hunter Biden possessed a firearm despite knowing he was an unlawful user and an addicted to a controlled substance, Weiss office also said. Its investigation of Biden is ongoing. Of course, this is something we know that this is sort of a limited hangout, sort of. Is a sweetheart deal. The Biden family, I think this week the House Ways and Means Committee began a process of unsealing testimony of evidence that of a whistleblower inside the IRS the Department of Justice has interfered in an investigation of Hunter Biden, this involves six-hour testimony of this whistleblower. What's his name? Gary Shapley. When he said last month along with seven documents, matching 23 pages, which summarized the evidence against Hunter, thus serving as a precursor for an investigation itself. And I don't know if this will spark another investigation, perhaps a possible another indictment. I don't know. But obviously, this is a sweetheart deal. And we do know that this comes on after we heard last month of the Biden family receiving up to $10 million of funds from foreigners, including from foreign aid sources, including Ukraine, Burisma, $5 million to Biden's children, $5 million to the big guy, presumably Joe Biden. IRS investigation of that, and the creation of this of a dozen or so shell companies that are meant to launder this money. So it's a big scandal here that's, you know, it's still ongoing, but yet there's no indictment or anything. So,
well, I actually have a lot more respect for Hunter now after reading it. I mean, you think about it, you know, he has like millions of dollars of illegal income he won't pay any taxes on. He carries a handgun and he spends a lot of money on blow and hose, right?
I mean, did he claim a write-off on the
yeah, of course. Yeah, that was
expense.
Those would be the qualifications for entrance into the LA Country Club. I mean, yes. this is like just kind of the normal.
Did he write off his false teeth too that he had put in?
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, you know, just this is so hackneyed. You know what I mean? It's just a regular guy, you know, he has $3 million in income, won't pay any taxes, carries his illegal handgun with him.
No one can explain what he does for that money, right?
Well, he doesn't do anything, of course.
Okay, obviously the implication, it's all influence peddling, and because his dad, Senator, Vice President, President of the United States. So, which then, if you're an investigator, you're going, okay, there's a bigger crime here. There is the corruption of government, particularly the sitting President of the United States, because he's involved in a bribery scandal, just using his family as cover.
But just remember, you know, Anthony Weiner's laptop. I mean, this is stagecraft. It isn't going to go anywhere. It's just a distraction, one distraction after another. If there was anything serious that was going to come out of this, it would be like Jeffrey Epstein's list of clients. It would have occurred a decade ago or something, you know, or years ago, because whatever the evidence is, the factual evidence, it's been out in the hands of law enforcement, and it could obviously have been given over to the public. So it isn't going to happen. We're just told these tantalizing stories. I look at Hunter Biden as just a cultural debasing element. That's all he is. He's just there. He's a piece of pornography, right? I mean, he engages in, you know, sex. He was kicked out of a sex club. I mean, how vulgar do you have to be to be kicked out of a sex club? He appears intoxicated in all these videos. And then, he's just another white male who succumbed to the pornographic culture. And now he's there as a role model for children to look up to, basically, in their subconscious. And, I just feel that the less we are enticed by their distractions, the better, frankly.
Well, talking about suspected corruption, well, the fact that there's $10 million, which are not in dispute, is prima facie evidence of corruption. You can account.
Of course.
What are they doing for that money?
What do they do for it? I mean, if it's 100 grand, you could go, well, I don't know. But 10 million, what exactly did you do for the 10
million? Apparently, Hunter Biden wrote a book about himself and got like $1 million for it from, from a publisher, a New York publisher. I was like, who's going to read a book about Hunter Biden, an autobiography of Hunter Biden?
Yeah, of course.
Obviously, it's a payoff. I mean, hey, did you, same old symbol. Did you see the thing at the BlackRock James O'Keefe did, his media group?
Yeah,
that was his BlackRock recruiter spills the beans. Now, if you're working for an outfit like BlackRock, or if you're like you're like a midwit for the Democrat National Committee, and some really good-looking girl starts asking questions about your job, and the inside skinny, she's probably from O'Keefe's media group.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
These pretty girls show up, and they get these guys start bragging about their job, and they're spilling the beans. It's like, I mean, you think that, you know, people would be wise to this, but the pretty girls can be rather enticing. The Keefe Media Group published a news story focusing on perhaps James O'Keefe's most powerful investigative subject to date, BlackRock Incorporated, the video, the BlackRock recruiter named Sergey Varley describes how BlackRock is able to run the world in about 7 minutes of riveting undercover footage. The footage was captured over the course of several meetings in New York by one of O'Keefe Media Group's rock star undercover journalist. she's funny to hear her talk. She's got kind of like this uptick in her voice. She's acting interested in what he's doing. He's just bragging. BlackRock Inc. is the world's largest asset management company in the world. Of course, it's gained notoriety of late due to its rather large acquisitions and influence. Varley says it's easier for BlackRock to do things when people aren't thinking about it, and the asset giant doesn't want to be anywhere on the radar. This story, Sergey told our journalist that this is from the story itself. This is from O'Keefe's website himself. O'Keefe Media Group's website. Sergey told our journalist that BlackRock manages $20 trillion worldwide. According to him, it's incomprehensible numbers. BlackRock has over $9.5 trillion of assets under management. That's larger than the GDP of all the countries on the globe except the US and China. Senators are effing cheap. You got 10 grand, you can buy a senator. Varley remarked in what was arguably the most unabashed description of corruption and bribery from their own company we've ever heard. The extended soundbites from Varley is below. You can take this big effing ton of money and buy people. I work for a company called BlackRock. It's not who is the president or who is controlling the wallet. It's who is controlling the wallet of the president. You can buy your candidates. First, there is the senator. These guys are effing cheap. Got 10 grand, you can buy a senator. I'll give you 500K right now. It doesn't matter who wins, they're in my pocket. Varley doesn't stop there. He goes on to describe what those in his line of work think of the tragedy of war, saying is real effing good for business. Ukraine is good for business. You know that's right. Russia blows up Ukraine's grain silos. The price of wheat is going up mad. The Ukrainian economy is the wheat market. The price of bread goes up. This is fantastic if you're trading volatility. It creates opportunity for profit. Varley added that it's exciting when something goes wrong. I guess that's shit goes wrong. When shit goes wrong. Despite the fact that Varley literally asked the OMG journalist if she was undercover, based on the nature of her questioning, Varley didn't know he was being recorded when he was sharing his thoughts. He was skeptical of the reporter's questioning because normal people don't give a crap about these harsh realities. It's beyond them, says Varley. Well, this is something most people kind of already know, but it's funny. It's interesting to see this kind of get out in the mainstream regarding BlackRock and their influence. The fact that they're profiting off the war, the volatility. This is disaster capitalism, you know, that many have written about. So,
yeah, I think that at a very low level of political power, the politicians can be bought for almost nothing, but you're buying virtually nothing when you own them. I think at the top, you know, the people who are actually running the Congress and the Senate, who are controlled by the oligarchs, I don't think you can buy them for anything. I think they are part of the oligarchic class, and you know, there's got to be some kind of we've talked about in the past. There's got to be some kind of bifurcation of control. You know, you have congressmen like mine, who is a low level Latino. You know, I don't think he has no power whatsoever, but there's obviously individuals who do control the Congress, and those guys cannot be bought. They are, you know, Masonic, and they are satanic. They're fully committed to, you know, using the government for destruction, and they can't be bought. I think this kind of an interview is useful because it gets people to think and try to start to move through the analytic process, you know, like, well, what is the government? You know, so this is good. But if they don't do that, if they just go into the cul-de-sac, well, BlackRock, well, what's BlackRock? Who controls BlackRock? What does BlackRock control? Who controlled the government before BlackRock? Who created, you know, so what I'm saying is the analytic process, you have to end up with, you know, an understanding of the group, the real group that controls the political and economic process. And these kinds of stories are great to start people off, but you don't want to stop with just thinking, well, now we've identified, you know, the evil is BlackRock and we have to break up BlackRock or control BlackRock or something like that, because that won't help anything. You know, they, BlackRock is just part of the team.
Yeah, it also it reveals the reality of, or the nature of the political system and how it relates to the political economy, how things are manipulated and controlled.
Yeah.
Is the BlackRock's, you know, Larry Fink, who says that people have to be forced to accept change or forced to change, and how this is implemented. They implement this to the control of their assets. And this is called, you know, ESG, environmental social governance, and they can determine whether or not we'll be forced to drive electric vehicles or have gas stoves or even to the type of clothing we wear, what's being designed.
What kind of money you can use to buy things with.
Yeah, yeah. So it's one of these things are beyond, you know, to the extent that, you know, we can vote for politicians and hear politicians talk about the issues. No one talks about the role of these corporations that are literally, you know, the buying up, they buy up governments and they strategize at places like Davos or Bilderberg or wherever they meet. And this is where policy is really being formulated, and then it's implemented through the managerial class, the political class. But these are the ones making the decisions. Like the, it was a couple of weeks ago, Davos announced that they want to reduce the number of privately owned vehicles like 90% throughout the world by 2050. Well, sorry, who elected those sons of bitches?
Yeah.
To make that decision to anybody. They just presume they can make these decisions because they'll implement that through their control of media assets. Their assets is control of media. It's control of ExxonMobil they control who gets capital, who has access to financing. That's gonna drive General Motors or Honda into a type of vehicles they make, or how many vehicles they make, or if they make vehicles at all. For example, they're trying to maneuver ExxonMobil out of the petroleum industry. Well, wait a second, that's what they do. Why would they wanna do that? It's because through ESG. And it's all this Davos strategy. I heard there was an interesting headline I saw a couple of weeks ago where an AI had determined that people at Davos need to be assassinated.
clear-minded computer.
It's logic.
Yeah.
Cold logic.
Yeah.
It's just, wait a second. It's like, so if you set these things free to think logically, they come to these conclusions. So it's important to know what is the nature of BlackRock and Larry Fink and sort of this financial elite, this ruling elite that that are beyond any accountability or any political accountability or elections. Or normally you think you can elect politicians to represent you and they can somewhat reflect what the people want. And of course, that isn't the case. And so
I like your expression. You have the government class, which is Davos, and then the managerial class, which is our government.
Yes.
And that is a very clear expression. I like that. I think that's brilliant.
And they meet at places like Bilderberg and Davos and get their orders. Yeah. These are steering committees. Or they this is done through the Council of Foreign Relations or the Trilateral Commission or any these private, you know, clubs, they will, but these are coordinated. And you know, these are the central bankers, and it's the, yeah, and they coordinate everything. And so this, you know, the system was hijacked, a century ago.
Right. I mean, look at here in California, you've got Mayor Brand in San Francisco, but she's just a puppet of the Pelosi, Newsom, Brown. I mean, they invented her, and then she gets funded by Soros. But then go back into the trajectory of those families. And what you see is, Soros, who funds her, is a creation of the Rothschilds, just mm-hmm. flat out, right? And, but then if you look at the triad of Newsom, Brown, and Pelosi, again, you see the Rothschilds, because they are actually all coming through J. Paul Getty.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that funding source is. I mean, Newsom, Gavin grew up in the Getty household, for God's sakes. But Getty is created by the Rothschild. He's a, you know, Masonic creation. He's the one who brought Rothschild's furniture from Berlin to London so that the Baron wouldn't lose any of his art objects. And that's just fascinating, because it's really the same kind of role that then Gavin Newsom's father played with J. Paul Getty, because he was then the individual who took the money to the kidnappers, right? So you can see that, you know, the oligarch is just invisible because the proxy is in front of him. And now in the case in California, you've got Mayor Brand, this, you know, I mean, I don't want to be cruel, but just not qualified individual, right, running the city of San Francisco.
Is it Brand or Breed?
Oh, Breed, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Breed.
But so Breed is not qualified, and she is a creation of a group who comes through Getty, who comes through the Rothschild banking family. And you know, it's just that the stench of the banking families is, you know, is just everywhere. If you just open your mind to it, you know, there it is.
Did you see the thing here with the story with Dr. Peter Hotez dodging the debate with RFK Jr.?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
I think the pot is up to $1.5 million or something.
Oh, more.
Last time I checked. You know,
how many times have we talked about this? They will not debate. They can't. And so the excuse is that, I mean, I love Hotez. What he said was, he goes, look, I'm just a scientist. He's an attorney. I mean, he's an attorney, for God's sakes. And you go, yeah, but Peter, you'd be talking about virology, vaccine, which is what you would know about, right? No, he's an attorney. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's stupid. But they can't debate. I mean, Hotez, I'm sure you've seen the YouTube video.
Well, I can't debate him, but I'll slander him.
Slander him and say, I mean, yeah, that's right. There you go, Peter. But there's a great video which captures Hotez's, you know, like chronology of his position on the vaccine. It is literally a descent into madness. He starts out talking about how the vaccine is going to, you know, it gets rid of it. You don't have to worry about it. There's no way you. And then he goes, well, you need another one. You're going to need a second one. And then he goes, the third, and then he has another. He goes, well, we've always known there'd have to be a booster. We've known this since the beginning, you know, even though at the beginning he's talking about you're only going to need the one. And then at the end, he's frothing. And he's going, well, you know, there's going to have to, there'll be yearly and annual and perhaps even biannual. I mean, and so, you know, so every time they've switched kind of the, you know, the specificity of like, well, what does the vaccine do and how often you have to take it? He was there to justify and to say, this is exactly right. And also to make the position that we've already always known this, regardless of what he said. So
he's like Dr. Fauci. He's a scientist who doesn't know that videotape exists.
Yeah, exactly. So Hotez is not going to debate anyone. He's just going to insult and, you know, slander people and then to, you know.
Well, he says, RFK Jr., he's an attorney. He's very clever and he knows how to do arguments in court. That's what Hotez told Rogan. And what am I? I'm a scientist. Well, you're not in court. You'll be sitting across the table from him. So presumably drinking coffee, whatever beverage you want, and just, or even just on a Zoom call debating, and you can, you know, you can invoke all of the science you want to question.
Of course. You know. I mean, if he had a leg to stand on, he'd be standing on.
Well, didn't he also say he won't debate like mothers who,
right.
Now these are mothers who aren't presumably, most of them probably are not attorneys and presumably don't know how to argue in court.
Nope.
He won't even debate them.
They're mothers. You can't debate mothers because they're mothers. You know, they're
guys. These are mothers. I'm a scientist. These are mothers. These are mothers who are mad.
It's diminishing returns. They use these people's credibility up, and they're going to have to come up with someone other than Hotez, who is a kind of monstrous looking individual. He just looks evil. So they need to get, you know, another, you know, kind of. Person of the, you know,
well, he said people like Kennedy are responsible for 250,000 deaths. He didn't see no citation, of course. He just say it. Yeah, this is the scientist again. Then he has said that people who question the science or question vaccines should be arrested.
Yeah, and you know, if I had a chance to debate him, I almost actually had a chance to debate a virologist at UCSB, but it. For some reason, they didn't want to, and it all fell apart. But I would just go, look, you know, you make all these claims about the vaccine. It's, you know, does all this good stuff. There's no side effects. That's great. I don't believe you, but what I will believe is a control group. Let's see your control group, Peter. Bring it out. Bring out 1 million people who didn't take it, and let's just look at what happened to them as opposed to like 1 million people who took it. There you go.
What RFK Jr. says in these debates is makes a persuasive point. It's an argument. He goes, you know, five of my children have allergies.
Yeah. Says,
why is that? Says, well, because of the adjuvants. Adjuvants cause overreaction of the immune system. You get allergies. And he points out the fact that, chronic illnesses have doubled in young children since the vaccine schedule was increased in the 1980s. Why is that? Well, you know, correlation may not be causation, but it certainly is grounds for suspicion and investigation. They shut the debate down. They say, no, we don't want to talk about that. Yeah. What are you thinking? Or autism. You know that autism, where they've made autism part of the rainbow flag now?
Have they?
Yes, that's intersectionality. Normalizing all these dysfunctions and diseases.
So is it GBTQL, and then is like, what is it, like an asterisk for autism? What do they use as a symbol?
They put it, the flag of autism, is that symbol.
Color?
It's like an infinity symbol or something. It's like the loop or something. And that's autism, I guess, but it's neurodiversity. And we're just supposed to normalize, I guess, this stuff. You don't question why it's happening. It's just all part. It's just like you're not going to question why more people are suffering from gender dysphoria or sexual disorientation or sexual dysfunction or identifying as homosexual or engaged in that behavior. Just accept it as a group. It's a group. You have to identify, you have to respect it. And it's a legitimate group. So it's not because kids are being groomed or being subject to sexual abuse and toxic culture, diet, whatever, diseases, these things. It's, you just have to accept it, that they exist as a group and they have dignity as a group. Same with autism. It's a group, it's neurodiverse, and you have to accommodate them, not question why these children are suffering neurological damage. It's
exactly.
They're now a protected group, you know.
Yeah.
Thing with all these people, kids in our, 20% of students supposedly identify as non-binary or gay or whatever, whereas 10-15 years ago it was less than 2%. Why is that? Well, because society has put out all these social cues to encourage the behavior at the same time pathologizing normal behavior, particularly if you're a plain old white person, a white guy.
Yeah, and feminizing them physiologically. They've got all that estrogen mimicry now in males, and they've,
RFK talked about that. Was that ecstasy? What's that drug?
Estrogen.
Estrogen, but estrazine or something?
Yeah, that's right.
I might be mispronouncing. Basically, it's RFK, do you know how that's been spilling into the water supply and these things, and that's leading to lower, high estrogen levels and lower testosterone levels. And so Alex Jones talked about gay frog, turning the frogs gay, he was essentially correct.
Well, exactly right. And the thing is that Hotez, who incidentally is a Benai Brith, I believe, member, but he certainly is a Benai Brith prize winner. They gave him a huge award for his great work. He wrote a book called, I forget the title, but basically it was about his daughter. And it was, I think her name was Rachel, and the title was it was like, vaccines did not cause Rachel's autism. And so he talks about his daughter who is autistic. And he says there's no way it was vaccines, and he has some explanation. And then he even posits that it's a genetic disorder, that autism is just genetic.
Where's the science for that?
Well, also, where was all the autism if it's genetic in like the 1920s and 30s? I mean, they've got public school records in terms of, people who are mentally challenged. Where were they?
Well, how does it go to like 1 in 50,000 to 1 in 75?
Yeah, exactly. So you see, this is almost like his vaccine positions. It's ludicrous. It's not debatable. All they can do is intimidate and try to get people to just stay on the trajectory of basically of transhumanism, because this will end up, transsexual will be the entry point to transhumanism. That they will start reducing what were human beings and human genotypes to you know, some other kind of species, some lower form, you know, of, I mean, they're already kind of doing it. I read that 40%, memory serves, 40%, just an amazing percentage of people who are applying for transsexual surgery were autistic. And I think that the people who manipulated those individuals into believing that they really need, you know, genital surgery and hormone blocking are just about as evil as anything that's ever crawled on this planet. But that is the case. That is what I read, that this enormous fraction are autistic. So someone like that who then makes the transition, I mean, really, what is left of the kind of the genotypical, what his chromosomes potential to be human were and was, what's left of it when you now are, you've damaged them to the point where you're autistic, and then you take away their chromosomal sexuality. You're already, I mean, you're so far down in the process of transhumanism, it's, you know, the next steps into half dog, half human is just almost,
trivial. Well, yeah, some out of H.G. Wells' novel or something, yeah.
Yeah.
It is what the system does is they damage these people, victimize them, and then mobilize them as sort of janissaries.
Yeah. Become a political, you know, like I was listening to this one woman. She was talking about they're talking about the game Zelda. It's a video game.
Mm-hmm.
And this one woman, she's a black woman, and she was saying, you know, the trans community has always thought that the character Zelda has characteristics of a transsexual person. And I thought to myself, you know, this thing has been out there for like 20 years. It's the oldest video game, Zelda. And I was going, lady, you know, you have to lie to be, you know, like presenting woke ideas. You just have to lie because, I mean, it's not true. I mean, there is no, because there was no trans community. And there's certainly no trans community that's analyzing games to see if there's components, you know.
Yeah.
And so this is preposterous. What you might have now is the woke company is putting in these cues to try to, be with the au courant moment, right? But that is certainly possible. But the idea of looking historically at the trans community, this is just like Biden talking about our transvestite war heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And not providing any citation because, well, I think it's a pretty small group. You know?
Well, all the trannies that signed a Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I think there is. God almighty. Yeah, so anyway, it was quite a week, wasn't it?
Well, we had, you were away, Ted Kaczynski, a.k.a. the Unabomber, died, reportedly committed suicide. He was a Harvard-educated mathematics professor who became known as the Unabomber after making 16 home bombs that killed 3 people. According to the Federal Bureau of Prisons, he died of suicide. He had been in a maximum security facility in Colorado, but was moved to a medical facility in North Carolina in December of 2021 due to ill health. Kaczynski, who gave up a promising career to live as a hermit in a Montana cabin, went almost 20 years before finally being captured in April 1996, and is considered the most prolific bomber in American history. The explosives he made, which he mailed or hand-delivered, also injured 24 victims. Kaczynski wrote a 35,000-word anti-technology and anti-leftist manifesto, Industrial Society and Its Future, better known as the Unabomber Manifesto, which warned the world about how rapidly expanding technology would threaten and possibly ruin humans. You've written, or you've done a lot of work on Ted Kaczynski.
I've written about Kaczynski, and I've also had a lot of, you know, written articles concerning this. And it's just a terrible and tragic thing. He was one of the patients selected. No one knows exactly how, but he was selected for Dr. Henry Murray's MK Ultra experiments in Harvard in between 58 and 62. And
he was like a 60, wasn't he like a prodigy, like 16 years old?
He was 16 years old when he entered Harvard. Absolutely brilliant European man who they for some reason wanted to play with his mind. And what they did was is they gave him LSD. And then they put them in these boxes and subjected them to extremes of temperature and sound, and then high and low pressure. And they gave them reduced oxygen, and they made them, they kept them awake for like 3 days. And then finally, they actually gave them electroshock. And then they actually also forcibly interrogated them. And so there's really, if you think about it, the idea that there's some kind of science here being conducted is just preposterous. This was, you know, they were actually trying to figure out how to break people's minds, and they're trying to find the effects of LSD, because you can really understand it when you look at Murray's background. He was in the OSS during the war, and he actually was a colleague of Herbert Marcuse. Was he
Jewish?
You know, they don't know. I don't think he's Jewish. I think he is. His family's Masonic. I can guarantee you that. He's banking family, 100%. And so he's the Masonic family. I don't know that much about him, but I know he is from a banking family. His mom's is like Bill Gates's mom is connected into the Federal Reserve. And so with Kaczynski, the thing that is, I think, most important, you know, understand about his process is that Murray was the mentor of Timothy Leary. Mm-hmm. And he also basically designed Leary's beginning experiments with psilocybin. And Murray actually ran all that.
So did he hook him up with the Mellon family?
Yeah. In fact.
Another banking family. Yeah.
Another banking family. And so the counterculture, when you think about this clump, you know, and also remember, you've got Murray came up with these scales, you know, these kind of bizarre psychological scales to try to determine personality. This was the cover that they were using to try to basically find ways, well, to end what, you know, fascism, right? I mean, this was so basically this was, you know, one of the main goals here is the same goal that the American Jewish Committee had, as trying to understand how to control the minds of people. And so Murray controlled Leary, designed his experiments. And then, you know, you out of all of this, you get the counterculture, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So Kaczynski was just one of the early victims of the process by which they did their studies. Which ended up with, you know, on one hand, you had the kind of demasculization and kind of de-ethnication. The ethnicities were destroyed. The authoritarian personality. And then the other side, you've got the sex, drugs, and rock and roll stuff, which is coming out of Harvard and Mellon and Murray. And so Kaczynski was just this tragic individual who was. He was victimized by the process. You know, his manifesto, some people tend to see deep things, and I just see a broken mind.
Well, there's some insights and some, like anything, there's some like about and technology and its use. I can see why he would have a jaundiced view of technology, considering what he went through.
Yeah.
You know, but it was anti-technology. You're talking about the dehumanizing effect that technology has. Denying your identity, losing control, these things. And these things are all, society becomes more complex, we become more interdependent and therefore dependent. And obviously the more simple you live, the more control you are. Of course, there's some trade-offs there because you, with a higher technology, you get the capacity for, greater power, information, these things. Industrial society, you instead of muscle power, you use steam power. You know, that was the whole thing. And you could build a lot more, you could do a lot more things. You can build things like the Titanic that sink on its maiden voyage, but you know what I'm saying? These are the things that, so you can, the problem with Kaczynski's theory is that he assumes that technology itself is evil as opposed to evil men. I mean, it can be misused and there's no ethics. And you can, now he was an atheist and he didn't believe in really right and wrong from what he gets. But his values reflected much of the same thing you see coming out of Davos and the World Economic Forum and also, the Club of Rome, sort of this you read his work or his manifesto, he adopts a Malthusian view. He thinks that ultimately the population is going to have to drop drastically to live a more simple life in these things. And so you can see how he was kind of driven to this sort of madness. It is ironic, the government drives him crazy, and then they call him insane because he was a victim of these experiments. But ultimately, his view is sort of this Malthusian Club of Rome attitude towards things,
I mean, you wonder, well, exactly how did he develop his ideas? Who was he in communication with? Was it just unique thoughts that he had sitting there in Montana in his cabin? I mean, how did this whole his intellectual trajectory take place?
He was reflecting typical Malthusian views that we see popularized on television and
I think
that's par Ehrlich and these things. You're watching, is he watching Tonight Show in his Montana cabin, par Ehrlich? talking about the population bomb.
But the thing is, he looked at all of that. And you're absolutely right. That was his perspective, but it was through the lens of someone who had been kept in a small box on LSD and given electroshock, He was just cracked. And that's the main thing in my mind, is just the tragedy, individual tragedy of what they did. But what's important to me is that, and what I've written in the past, is that Kaczynski is actually the symbol of the counterculture. I mean, this what they did to him, they basically did to all of us, in the 60s with the drugs and the rock and roll and, the altered states. I mean, they just got better at it. He was one of the first prototypes.
Well, things you can develop technology on a humane, with a humane purpose, or keep it to a scale that's humane. Approach where you build it because you can, as opposed to whether or not you should. And you can see that with there's no reason why you couldn't develop something like the internet or television, use it responsibly and ethically, right? We've seen that, because when television first started, they did try to, they had to genuflect the sensibilities at the time. But nevertheless, it shows you can decide to do responsible, informative, wholesome programming versus subversive programming, and they did change when they wanted to.
If you subtract the Judeo-Masonic influence, hidden influence, all of these systems are viable. What makes them evil is the fact that they condense political control in a secret society who's intent on destroying everyone else. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, look, a good example is technology and music. Prior to recording, very few people would ever get to hear Bach or Beethoven, because you'd have to attend the symphony, and very few people could do that. But it's through industrial society technology that people were opened up to that. That's why you had the flowering middle class, which they're destroying now, but for you had the middle class that actually used to support middle class luxuries or amenities, that you could develop culture, some sense of refinement, philosophy, leisure time in these things. So there's a balance here that he just utterly rejected. He said it's because it's inevitable. That's because malevolent forces had taken over and were guiding society in that direction. The very forces that experimented treated him like a guinea pig. So he developed a very jaundiced view of everything because of his experience.
Yeah. So,
by the way, when he was caught, it's interesting that the government never owned up to what they did to him.
No, they never did.
You had to read about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was only basically would never have come out except for the LSD disclosures. Mm-hmm. When they found, all these materials that, that linked paychecks and pay stubs to different projects. Murray never, admitted anything until he was caught.
Here's the thing about technology, and you've written about this, the Macy conference as early as the 1950s, and how the development of the personal computer and technology were all designed or developed for the purposes of cybernetics and control, manipulation of society. Same with mass technology.
Right,
again,
right.
there's nothing in and of itself evil about this technology, this ability to do it. It's a question of using it ethically. And, you know, you can use the stuff ethically. The Catholic Church has written documents on the use of media, Intermorifica, which is a Vatican II document about the moral use of media, how you can't use this to seduce or provoke or corrupt society. You have to have moral people in charge of these things. Same thing, you need moral people in charge of like the economy and the money supply. Because if you have a self-described immoralist like John Maynard Keynes in charge of the monetary system, the banking system, you're going to have trouble, and which we do now, you know.
Yeah, when I was a kid, there was this thing called X for movie rating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was also a very strict standard of like, what movies were appropriate for what age group. And that was just the world that I grew up in. And X was condemned. And Hollywood would really struggle against that rating, you know, mm-hmm. because they knew it was a death sentence. What's kind of heartening is the complete collapse of sales of Bud Light.
Yes.
it's as if the public now realizes that we have to do our own condemnation, what the Archbishop League used to do for Catholics with movie ratings. Now we have to do with our meeting on our media on our own. And it's absolutely spectacular because it's continuing. In other words, I thought, well, once they fire the person, you know, the Bud Light will just go. No, it hasn't. It's as if they, the public has just realized now we have to actually do something. We have to be our own government and our own ability to condemn. Now, I don't know if you saw it, but Bud Light put out a commercial, which was, you know, ostensibly the antidote to the transvestite spokesperson for the beer, but in fact was the most brutal attack on Europeans I have ever seen in any media. I mean, they doubled down. They made their audience, the user of their beer, they ridiculed him in like 15 different vignettes.
Yeah, I saw that where the guy like walking his bare feet on hot.
Yeah, he's walking in bare feet. So in other words, he is a fool. He's an idiot. He's a white male. And the only like hip person is this black person. You know, everyone else is just has something wrong with them. And so this is how they're going to recover the lost, you know, audience that are consumers. So they're doubling down. What they're saying is we're going to continue with our propaganda. The hell with you.
Well, think of Stockton Rush.
There you are. Think of that. And I don't think he was like, I don't think he was drinking a Bud Light when the, when the hull collapsed on him. So, this was really the response by the public was ideal. And this is how we do it. You know, this is how we can use the internet and our own capacity, like to be sane, to protect ourselves against these coming agendas, because obviously, you know, the transgender culture or community is artificial. It's just something that the oligarchs are trying to insert into culture for malevolent purposes. It's part of their transgender, transhuman, you know, project. So they can like Huxley described in Brave New World, where we're going to end up as the deltas and the epsilons, and they'll be the controllers at the top.
Mm-hmm. And they're using things like the environment or climate change. Or,
yes, right. They're claiming
to justify all these things. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, gosh, good to be back, and we'll talk next week. Okay.
Take care. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.